Well, hello and welcome back to another edition of Linking the Travel Industry, where we discuss recent travel industry related news events between myself, Anne and Osh, who I will get to introduce themselves in a minute. My name is Rian. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Agentivity, where we help agents achieve insight, control and growth with the booking data flowing through the agency. You are more than welcome to participate when we talk about a certain topic or a subject that you want to share your thoughts on. We do welcome that. So please just raise your hand when we get to it. We've got a very packed show today. But before we start, Anne and Osh, over to you guys for a quick introduction and then we can get going.
Thank you, Rian. Welcome, everyone. I'm Anne. I'm an independent consultant in the travel space with both LeapShift and Explore Tech. Thank you. Over to you, Osh.
Good morning, everybody. This is Osh. I am the host of a business travel podcast called What's Up in Business Travel, where we give you all the insights into business travel news in under 15 minutes. Additionally, I'm the vice president at Traxo, and today it's Labor Day weekend in North America. So happy Labor Day weekend, everybody.
Thank you very much for those joining. Nice to see some familiar faces in there. The format of this discussion is really about a post I do on a Friday, which is what I thought would be the post that stood out, and then a few extras. So if we can start there, my first story last week was about the government of Nigeria, who eventually caved in to some demands by Emirates to release some of the funding they were holding for ticket sales that took place out of Nigeria. I believe that the $265 million they've agreed to actually let leave the country was not still, you know, all of the due ticket sales, but it probably was enough to satisfy Emirates to keep their schedule going in and out of Nigeria. I don't know if there's much to discuss here. It certainly probably raises a few questions about risks about flying to certain countries where the government might do this sort of trick. But I don't know whether you had any other thoughts on this, Anne or Osh.
Well, I'm just really surprised that, you know, it's Nigeria. I think it was mentioned in Paul's comments there that we see this with country. I think the countries he named were Venezuela, Cuba, Libya. But sort of Nigeria is the largest market in Africa. So that is something I find really surprising. But
yeah, and thank you for mentioning Paul's name. It's worth mentioning that his post on it was really good because, like I said in my post about it, most people just mentioned it, but he actually gave a very good background story, and it's worth reading that post to understand exactly what's going on.
He really did. He always does, right? And yeah. I think it's really worthwhile following Paul because he's my go-to person for anything related to payments.
That's right. So that's Paul von Elfen, for those listening who weren't sure about that. Ash, any comments on the story or time to move on?
Not really.
Excellent. Moving on to something over in Germany, this post from Dominic Short was very interesting. It talks about a movement in Germany lobbying, if you want, for paying when you fly, you know, paying when you check in. So not just paying for the ticket months in advance. And this is really a reaction to a lot of the disruptions, you know, happening in Europe at the moment. I thought it was only the German Business Travel Association which was advocating for this, but actually it was also a local state minister in Germany who was putting this on the table saying, you know, to be fairer to the consumer, they should pay only when they fly. I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts about this, but Anne, what was your reaction to the story?
I've been following this for quite a few years, actually. I mean, it's been around pre-pandemic and raised by Germany before, and the BARIC have been very, very vocal on this topic. I mean, I believe that Lufthansa have a program in place, which is part of the corporate program, where some customers actually do pay as they fly. There are other airlines that have these types of programs, but they are corporate programs. And I fully understand, you know, how this is, well, of course, has become an issue with the pandemic and what we have seen. And I'm really in favor, but I'm still thinking, how can we, you know, solve this in the most practical way? Because what you do to sort of lock in the fare and keep it, right? I'm in favor, of course, of this.
I think this is nonsense. I don't even understand what the heck this is. Okay, so pay as you fly. If the flight is canceled, you don't pay?
The idea is that you pay when you've successfully checked in. So you go, okay, can I fly today?
So is the model to help a traveler pay for the flights? Or is the model to prevent a traveler from having to pay for a flight that doesn't actually fly?
Yeah, it's the latter at the moment, right?
It's
the
current focus.
Who decides that if the reason is legit or not?
It's very unlikely, obviously, because, of course, the biggest impact is going to be the cost of the fare is going to be tremendously high. And that's
But it's very interesting if we take this into the perspective of tradable tickets and we're looking at blockchain and NFTs, right? what's so wrong about, you know, if I can't use my ticket, which is actually, I mean, it's sort of a bit of a separate topic from this topic, right? But it still belongs there in a way. If I can actually trade my ticket, or let's say that the airline can actually buy the ticket back from me, and there is a commission involved here, there is money to be made. I mean, what the result is that I'm going to be a very happy and very loyal customer. At the same time, the airline could actually make even more money off of this. So they're very interesting thoughts around this whole topic for me.
But you've just said it there, and provided the technologies at play step up, you know, and
yes,
that sort of transactional environment to take place, then I can totally see it. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes.
It sounds like it's going to be just like a sort of European thing. I was confusing the Americans about when to pay for tickets, right, Ash?
But again, I mean, what is one of the biggest problems in the US? That is all these tickets that are just out there floating, right? You have tons. You could fill up the Atlantic Ocean, really, with all the tickets that are floating.
No, you have to fill up the cloud because they're all electronic. So get with the decade. But with that being said, right, it's the age-old non-refundable, non-endorsable, right? I mean, the non-endorsable is really the key right there, because there used to be a time when you could actually transfer tickets where it became such a big deal. But prior to that, change the name of an airline ticket and let somebody else fly.
You still can. With some low-cost airlines, you can today. You can change the name. There is a fee to change the name, but it's perfectly doable. There are airlines that allow it. And systems that allow it.
I wasn't expecting this subject to go on so long, but Stefan, welcome.
I don't think that it's a European thing. I think it's a very German thing. And I think Anne summarizes it perfectly. This has been challenged for decades, actually. I remember the days when the sequential use of coupons was actually at the highest federal court here in Germany. And Lufthansa lost this case against the consumer protection groups. This has not been disputed at this level, to my knowledge, in any other country. And I'm sure that Lufthansa will find a way. Basically, it's all about leaving choice to the customer. Today, you have no choice. You have to pay right away. They don't even offer installments. So I'm sure that the German airlines, because eventually this will not only be Lufthansa, but the German airlines will find a way to provide this kind of choice. And it could just be a fare that's, you know, prohibitively expensive, but, you know, that will allow some sort of freedom. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Thank you for that, Stefan. That is very good.
Great insight. What's the acronym here, Rian? PAFE?
Yes. Evelyn, welcome to the stage. You want to do a quick introduction and add your thought to the story?
Yes, thank you. I have a background in travel and I've now moved into a customer experience space. But I was thinking about this in the thoughts of flight retail. So you've got flight retailing, and not many people buy something normally. Like if you go into a shop, you don't buy something and then walk out the shop without the actual goods. Whereas with a ticket, that's exactly what you do. You buy months in advance for a ticket that you don't use until a day in advance where you turn up, the plane's there and perhaps it's not. So I actually think it'd be quite good. Now, when you have some people, and I'm thinking now personal travel as well as business, but when you have some people who have bought a ticket in advance, they then can't use that ticket because, you know, the plane is cancelled. And then they have to pay more money to go onto another plane or go for another trip and then wait 4 or 5 months for a refund to get a credit, not even an actual refund, but a credit refund. It's really frustrating. That to me, as someone who is buying a product, I'm not actually getting being what I'm paying for.
Yep.
So I feel that the legacy of ticketing has to completely change. And that's going to happen with virtual payments. It's going to happen with digital payments. And it's going to happen with, you know, cloud technology and maybe even blockchain in the future, because then you've got the history of all the transactions.
Couldn't agree with you more. You know, Evie, it's just a brilliant summary. Spot on. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. move on to something that is then more European-wide, if you want. And this is a story about Finnair and Qatar Airways and their partnership. This was brought to us by Will Horton. And what was very interesting about the story is his angle on the, I mean, obviously for Finnair, the move they're making here is to help them deal with the disruption of the flights that they now have to do to Asia outside of the Russian airspace, which, you know, was impacting their bottom line substantially. But also Qatar Airways, as a non-European carrier, has a cap on the amount of flights it can operate into and out of Europe. And this partnership is on the edge there of playing with the, I would say, the nerves of some of those European ministers who's imposed those rules. So very interesting article about the opportunity this paves for Finnair and Qatar. And it's more than just a plain old partnership. This is the potential to really drive massive amounts of traffic, you know, via that Doha route and be good for both Finnair and Qatar, but in my view, also good for the consumer because it will just add more choice. So what do you think about that story?
Like you said, massive opportunity for both airlines as I see it. And also, you know, strategically placed in Northern Europe than Finnair. And then, of course, with Doha, I mean, it's really a match made in heaven, isn't it? Because you sort of cover really the globe with this partnership. This is really something I wasn't really expecting, but good move and probably saves Finnair, I would say.
A very good move. And Finnair views this as long-term. They're not even beating about the bush. They say this is their long-term you know, strategy here. So I think great move all around.
Well, the only comment I have is that they're both One World Alliance members.
There
you
go. Yes.
That's nice.
That's right. And so now for the big news, really, of last week, right, is the story about the leak that happened about the codeshare plans between United and Emirates. I'm sure that leak was well planned. I saw they played very nicely on Twitter as well, making a few jokes. And I love the way this came out. It's big news. As I first saw the story posted by John Ostrover, where he talked about it as hell has indeed frozen over and these guys are making a pact. So let's start with Ash, because this, Ash, is right in your territory. What are your thoughts on this?
Why is this story a big deal? The fact that United and Emirates is getting together, that's nice, that's great. But why is it supposed to be a secret? Why is it developed in this way? What is the real big news?
I mean, two of the largest airlines in the world, and of course, Emirates not belonging to an alliance, makes it pretty big in my book. And Emirates very careful in choosing partners in general. Well, I mean, it's two giants teaming up, which is why I consider it big news. And I'm really impressed with United. I mean, they've done a total 180 in my book. And here they're partnering with one of the most, you know, important players in the world.
And also, it was interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating fact that you mentioned there that Emirates doesn't really have, you know, alliances, etc. But it's interesting to see also some of the comments. So Johnny Thorson was saying this is really big and it could trigger a reset of all the global alliance models. And Timothy, you know, O'Neill Dunn was saying that the other guys are going to be quite annoyed, if you think about it, some of the other alliances, because they've been banking on the fact that Emirates is not going to form this. And now they did. And I think that's one of the reasons, Ash, why it is such big news.
It was almost like Emirates was building its own little mini network, right, globally. And they were choosing partners without saying the word alliance. They were not saying anything about it. It was more of a partnership because there was value being created. And then here they are partnering with United. You know, United is not leaving the Star Alliance. So the question now becomes, is Emirates going to become a future Star Alliance partner? And if so, what happens to all the Emirates partners that are not part of Star Alliance today?
I'm actually told right as we speak that it's a three-way expressway. It's Air Canada, United, and Emirates.
So that sounds to me like Star Alliance is in the picture now, right?
I'm so interested and fascinated by this concept of the alliances because I have expressed this. I've been vocal about this before, that I don't really think that the alliances have done enough for the airlines who belong to them. I mean, there's just so much they could have focused on. The list is endless what the alliances could have focused on that we haven't really seen. The only alliance is IAG, who is, I think, paving the way technically in a far better way than the other two. I am actually saying that all the alliances have done a very, very poor job
So back to the Emirates story, right, with United. So do you think, and is this going in the direction of United as a partner of Emirates, where Emirates is facilitating a relationship with United similar to their old partners? Or do you think this is a play where Emirates is now folding into the Star Alliance?
I personally wonder whether they're going to fold into the Star Alliance.
What are your thoughts, Stefan?
It's not a thought. It's more like a question, because you're talking about Star Alliance, no partnerships in general. I wonder how this was perceived by Lufthansa, because United Air Canada and Lufthansa are, you know, they have this Atlantic joint venture. And I mean, it's been a pretty tough week for Lufthansa last week. You know, the Condor, decision, they cannot terminate the interline agreement, the strike, and, the lost bid with ITA. So now this, and, you know, it's just a question. What are your thoughts?
Those are very good points to mention, Stefan. I didn't think about all those, but yeah, that was a bit terrible week for Lufthansa overall, absolutely.
It's been a terrible week for them. And yes, I totally agree with you, Stefan. This must be pretty worrisome, right?
Speaking of alliances and more partnerships, so there's an announcement by Virgin Atlantic and Indigo Airlines about a new interline agreement.
I think this is wonderful. I think that one of the biggest complications that occurs when one gets to either Delhi or any of the major cities in India is, how do I connect easily and how do I move across to a local airline that can service me in the smaller cities? And so I think that this partnership is definitely needed. I think it gives clarity to travelers as to who they should fly once they get to India. Whereas before, you had to kind of figure out where you know who you wanted to use, and God knows where they are and whether the terminals are easy to get to and baggage transfer is going to be simple or hard. And so there's a lot of unknowns there. And I think that this one is definitely a good partnership. I think that the more of these partnerships that occur, the better and easier it'll be for the travelers to make a simple and easy decision as to who they'll fly locally. And hopefully in the process, they'll find that the transfer process is a lot easier as well.
Yeah, very, very good point, Ashji. Do you think it might make India, you know, a compatible hub in the long run as well? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I know that all the indications of the Indian market is that it's going to double in the next 5 years from a number of planes perspective and a number of flights perspective. And recently, Sabre is putting a big investment into India as well. So there's a lot of transfer, if you will, of resources going into the Indian subcontinent because of the expectation of what's going to happen in the next 5 years.
Let's talk about a new airline coming along in Canada, of all places. I saw the story by Adam Wilcox, brand new airline coming up there. Not a fantastically imaginative name. I think it's called something like Canada Jetlines or something like that. But did that create any vibes in your part of the world, Ash?
Not really. There's enough options, so having another option is not necessary. But, you know, this is the easiest way to lose money. So yeah. Whoever is putting money into this airline is probably going to lose their shirt at some point. But it's a nice attempt. I think that they're trying to go with this whole standardized fleet look. I think they only have one plane right now. So I don't know what they're going to accomplish with one aircraft.
When I saw this story, I thought, how many startup airlines is it possible to launch in a country? I think it's like 25 million people in Canada. I could be wrong. Probably more, right? 35 million?
Let's move on then to, again, Stefan reminded us about Lufthansa not having a great week. Their offer that they did with MSC for the acquisition or the majority stake in ITA, or the Italian airline ITA, the old Alitalia, was not successful. So the Italian government is now exclusively talking to consortium of Air France, KLM and Delta as their potential partners. The post was done by Bernard Lynch, and it was a very interesting story. He talked there about the fact that the Lufthansa MSC alliance wanted a bigger percentage of the business, and this obviously worried the Italian government, and so that's interesting to note that that was one of the things on the table. I personally, obviously, I think, and you probably feel the same as me, right? We probably wouldn't touch that airline with a barge pole, but good luck, right, to the consortium left that's bidding for that.
Absolutely, good luck. It's I wonder, are they going to be successful this time around? But it's interesting to see how that constellation comes back, right? The Air France, Delta, KLM, and then what was the former Alitalia. It's interesting to see it popping back up again.
Absolutely. I see a few thumbs up there in the audience and even people involved in the airline. So yes, it should be very interesting to see that how that turns out.
I think they should bring Alitalia back when they do this. ITA Airways just doesn't have the flavor. It doesn't feel right. With Delta Air France, KLM already having a partnership with Alitalia. And I think maybe therefore by default having the relationship with ITA Airways, I think that with this, there should have been a clause that they say, hey, we're going to bring Alitalia back, because Alitalia just flows. It just makes sense. And I think people are going to respond to that brand better. And if you're going to go to Italy from any part of the world, wouldn't you rather fly the local airline Alitalia versus ITA? ITA, it's like, is this ITA software airways? I don't understand what that ITA is.
So I wholeheartedly agree with you on the name, Ash, but Anne, it's quite clear to me that Ash has never flown Alitalia, has he?
No, I haven't. Actually true.
I have to remind you, Ash, that Alitalia, in the very, very, very long history, I think they were founded in 1948 or 1949 or something like that, they only made a profit once, and that was in 1998.
Was the service at Alitalia bad? And is it?
I have a story to tell you, but not in this forum, Ash, about
I actually have two stories.
So,
yes.
So as a American who's not flown ITA or Alitalia, I'm thinking there's white wine, there's pasta, there is pizza being served. You're getting ready for Italy, right? It's like, okay, this is your pre-meal before you land. See, now that's a concept in itself. I think we should find some investors to help us create a new airline and serve people like real nice food to the destination.
Yeah, why don't you introduce and tell us how to pronounce your name?
Can't even call me George, the English version of Georges. I'm from Greece. I'm based in Athens, Greece, and I'm new in this group. So thank you for having me here. I just raised my hand because I've been for more than 25 years an Alitalia employee, and I worked also for the ITA project, ITA, or Italia Trasporto Aereo. Just to give you a quick info, because there have been various points raised for this new company, I agree with Ash about keeping the Alitalia name, because they actually even paid $90 million to liquidate Alitalia airline in order to maintain the rights and the name itself and the brand and the logo. In a research in US that has been done when they were working on the new brand, they realized that out of the foreign companies existing in the US, it was the third most recognized logo and name in terms of airlines. So they thought that there is a quite good value over there, and they even paid $90 million in order to keep it. However, I don't think they will be using it, because they spent a lot much more in order to change and rebrand the company. Related to who would be discussing with to be the strategic partner, rather MSC Cruises and Lufthansa, or Centaurus with Delta, Air France and KLM. In fact, it is announced that they've been giving exclusive rights for the due diligence to Delta, Air France, to Centaurus. However, this is a kind of a déjà vu for the Italian company, because also in 2009, Alitalia did that with Air France KLM. However, the strategy of Air France KLM at that time had practically changed the company into a regional feeder of Charles de Gaulle and Schiphol Airport on their network, rather than empowering and helping Alitalia's network throughout the Mediterranean region as a hub and as an airline itself. So it practically went back again bankrupt after a small break with Etihad Airways as an investor. And now they're trying back again as ITA Airways to regain some kind of a strength and market share as well. However, in this time, it's the Delta, I believe, from what I read, that is let's say, driving this vehicle, is going to be driving and managing this vehicle, together with the help of France KLM, of course, after all these years of being merged and knowing how it works, this model. And we only hope for the best. In fact, the Italians, they mainly have to sell or resell their made in Italy design and experience of travel. So this is where they want to count in order to sell and rebrand their new airline, which is still governmental and we will see where it will evolve.
You've been there 25 years, so I think that you know a few things. And thank you for agreeing with my branding comments. Cyrian, I was right.
Absolutely, Ash. I mean, do you have $90-odd million to buy that back? If you want, there you go. But George, that was it felt like almost, you know, inside information. So thank you. That was very insightful. And thank you for
that. Was awesome. Yes,
thank
that
you
was
so
awesome.
Much.
Google announcing they're going to discontinue the ability for consumers to book flights on Google Flights outside of the US. Nobody really knows the reason. I think there's a lot of speculation about complexities of partnerships and searches and costs and all that sort of stuff. But fascinating outcome there, and not a massive, you know, deal made about it by them, just sort of very low-key announced. And I saw a few people post about this. Ash, is that anything
interesting? I made a bold prediction. I said Google is discontinuing it to get ready for something bigger. Uh-huh. That was my prediction.
And what,
so,
what would that bigger be?
The ability to book in a different way.
Interesting. And any thoughts?
I made a very sort of similar prediction that it's paving the way for something bigger. And I've, you know, Sid from Emirates and I, we've been speculating quite openly on LinkedIn on our thoughts. We think that maybe this is paving the way for Amazon Travel, who are clearly ramping up. And of course, that would be the biggest match in heaven we ever saw. And I think it could be a lot of money at stake here for both parties.
Watch the space, basically, with Google as basically the message there from both of you. And I think you might be very right there. So so let's see. There's a new airline coming out of Saudi Arabia. I mean, just some background. Saudi Arabia is on a massive expense spending there to get on par with the likes of, you know, the United Arab Emirates, etc., from being a major international airline hub. They want to be very high up with regards to tourism numbers. I see they've just announced the relaxation of visa and other regulations for a bunch of countries to make it easier for those people to travel to Saudi. And there's a new airline coming, and they've got 30 billion with a B available to launch the airline. So Ash, do you think that's enough for you to launch an airline? Would that be good money to have?
I'd like them to take this money and then maybe improve the existing airlines first and then start a new one. How about that?
There we go.
Saudi Arabia could really be like the country that saves the airline industry if they wanted to be, because they have that much money, right? So let's invest that money into all these existing airlines. Let's improve, because the number one reason why airlines say that they can't improve anything is because of lack of funds. Well, right. You know, they can put their little logo on the planes everywhere. Yeah. Saved by Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Now, I've done domestic air travel in Saudi and it was horrendous at the time. So yeah, there's a lot to improve there. I'm delighted, Vimal, that you're not only listening, but you've raised your hand to come on stage at this point. So I would love to hear, welcome. What are your thoughts on the story?
Hey, thanks, Rian. Hi, Anne. Hi, Ash. I actually made a post about Ria when it came out. And selfishly, I did it because 25 years ago, when I did the airline industry course, when I just joined Singapore Airlines, one of our projects was actually to create an airline. And we coincidentally, presciently, I would claim, picked the airline name as Ria. So it was quite funny for me to see this actually happen in reality. But jokes aside, there's a couple of things that I noted about it. So the 30 billion was what was allocated to Ria, but the government has actually allocated 100 billion to the aviation industry. And this is reported, right? Which means they're thinking long-term, they're thinking wholesale, they're thinking, you know, it's not just airline, right? It's aviation, it's airports, it's routes, it's product, it's everything put in. The other point that got me wondering was, you know, alluding to what Ash said, why would you launch another airline? And from the way it sounds, it's not meant to be a low cost, right? So if you have Saudi Air, why launch Ria? There's a couple of thoughts about that, which I had. And one of them, the main one, was that I think it has to do with cultural baggage or cultural predispositions. It's not easy for anybody to think or plan that they might want to travel to or through Saudi Arabia. And there could be many reasons. I mean, I'm sure we can all sort of check in on our own personal biases about these. But, you know, I think there is a plan to create some distance between the airline brand experience and what the traditional notions of what Saudi Arabia is about. That's my take on this. I think it's very new. They haven't announced any other things yet. Very exciting. I see loads of expats leaving jobs and moving into Saudi recently in the industry. It's looking up. I'm pretty excited by the idea, frankly. So yeah, that's kind of what I had to say about Ria.
I think that's actually really insightful and very, very smart analysis on your part to say that. And I would agree with you that you're probably spot on, actually, because how many people actually want to connect through Saudi Arabia? I don't know anybody personally that would want to. But then how does that solve the need for the plane to still land in Saudi Arabia and then maybe connect through or something like that? Still the same problem.
I think we've shown as travelers, and not as industry personnel, but as travelers, that we'll go where the low fares are. We're very willing to give up our data. We're very willing to handle crappy service. We're very willing to tolerate terrible handling of disruptions day in and day out, because to some extent we almost don't have a choice from our home airports and home airlines, right? But you got to look at this as so the main thing that they said was they want to rival Emirates. Now that gives you an idea as to what they're planning and how they're planning. So obviously, they want to be a base. They want to be a hub. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have actually seen what the plans are for Saudi Arabia for the next 30 years. It's phenomenal. They're not sparing any expense. They're growing. They're doing all that they can. So I think we're going to have to watch the space, right? I think they're going to try really hard, and they're going to use all the levers that they have, including price and you know, whatever else, to try and get people to fly through.
And I wanted to add also, I mean, I understand that of course Saudi market is the top market for some of these carriers, right? Emirates, Etihad, Qatar, and Turkish Airlines. So of course there would be a huge interest taking back that space as well, which must also be the intention here, because I mean that is a very, very wealthy market.
Very good point, Anne. Yes, like we saw on Alex's top routes, right? We saw some of those routes come up all the time. So yeah, very good. Very good point. I'm personally very excited, Viman, about what's going to happen here in the space. Yeah. Not just with the airline, but as you say, the entire approach there. I think it's fantastic that there's this strong vision and growth there. So it can only be good for the consumer in the end. So I'm very excited about it. So again, being conscious of the time, I think it's time for us to wrap up. I just want to thank everybody who joined us today for their time and getting on stage and, you know, chipping in, etc.
It was lovely to be in the US and to see Ash in person for the first time. Oh, yes. Thank you again, Ash, for a lovely barbecue.
It was great. You're welcome. All right, everybody. So we host this audio call every Monday. So please tell everybody about it. If you enjoyed it, then chances are high that others that you know will also enjoy it. And if someone cannot make it due to time zone or availability, we make this session available as a podcast on businesstravel360.com. You can subscribe to the podcast by searching Business Travel 360 on any of your podcast directories. And this is Linking the Travel Industry, signing off.